we're beginning on the top of Aleph at the two dots. Gemara here is dealing with Hatra'ah about the Mishnah makes a statement that a person's not chayav mita until he tirets mol the mita, until he allows himself or lets himself go to be killed. What does that mean? Simnalan. How do we know that? So Amar Rovo, Vite Mechizki, Amar Kro, Yumat Hamet. So what does it mean, Yumat Hamet? Ad Shiatir Atzmol Demita. I mean that Yumat Hamet, mean he'll be killed because he's already dead. Why is he already dead? Because he accepted the fact that when they warned him and said, if you do this action, you will be put to death. And he says, yes, Afal Pikein. Even though I'm going to continue to do that, or I understand the implications of my action, the implications of my action are that I will be put to death. Ad Shiatir Atzmol Demita. Amar Rav Chanan, Eide nara hamruasa shehuzmu ein haragim. So this is a statement that causes a lot of problems. It's a statement that was quoted earlier by the Gemara, by Tosfos earlier, which is that the edim of a nara hamruasa, it's a case of nara hamruasa, a woman who has kiddushin but not nisuin with an individual, and then she has an extramarital affair. In that extramarital affair, we have edim that come and testify to that fact. So what is the punishment? The punishment of an ara murasa is skila. It would be put to death. There's a death penalty for that. It's a capital case, capital crime. She's going to be put to death. So if you have edim zomimim, what does it work with edim zomimim? Edomim is kasher zomam lasot. Like they plan to do to the parties or the litigants. That's what happens to them. So if they're trying to put her to death, she's going to have a punishment of skila. Then they should get the same punishment of skila. Yet Rav Chanan says here that Edei Nara Merusash Uzmu Ein Neragin, they're not killed. Why? Mitoch Shecholim Lamar Losral Balabanu. There's another reason why they could come to testify here. What's the other reason they could come to testify? There are two reasons to testify against a Nara Merusash. One is to put her to death, because that's the punishment that she deserves for having an extramarital affair. The other implications of their testimony are that she is no longer allowed to live with her husband. Right? We learned that in Gemara and Sota. It's going to come up in a second, also the other half of this, that a woman who has an extramarital affair is asur le bala. She may not return. I mean, if she willingly has an extramarital affair, she's not allowed to return to her husband. But not only is she not allowed to return to her husband, she's also not allowed to marry or go to the boel, the one who perpetrated the crime with her. She is restricted from both of them, both her husband and the one she committed the crime with. So what did the edim come along and say? They find out their edim's on. They say, no, we weren't putting her to death. We just wanted to make sure that she didn't go back to her husband. That's what we came to testify about. We didn't come to testify to put her to death. It might be that's a side. That happens to happen when we say that she is out with her husband. She also gets killed. But that's how they can defend themselves. Umar says, "Vahashuba." What are you talking about? What happened to the Hatra over here? Didn't they warn her? The whole thing we're discussing over here, that Edim require, or the Edim have to give the parties that are going to be brought to trial, they have to give them a warning. Essentially, listen, if you do this, you're going to be put to death. So then they come to court and they say, no, we didn't mean to put her to death. What do you mean? That's what they warned her for. So it says, Lo'atruba. They didn't give her a warning. It says, Lo'atruba, Hecho Mikatlo. Wait a minute, if they never warned her, if there's no Hatra'ah, how do you ever get to the position where she would be put to death? I mean, Rav Chanan's statement is that even though she would have been put to death, the Edim would not have been put to death. But she couldn't have ever been put to death because there was no Hatra'ah. So when it says, V'isha chaveira, talking about a woman who's knowledgeable, right? V'alibo de Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. According to Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda's position, which you've seen before, the Tanya, Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda omer, Chaver ein tzarich hatra'ah. When it comes to a knowledgeable individual, he does not require hatra'ah. Lefi shlo nitna hatra'ah elavchin ben shogeg lemezid. There are different ways to view hatra'ah. Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda obviously has a specific view of hatra'ah, as hatra'ah is changing the status of the action from one of shogeg, one that could be considered a mistake, something that is a derivative of a misunderstanding. Someone can claim that they didn't know, but that changes it. Once you've warned the individual, then it's obvious that they're doing it mezid. They're doing it with intent, right? And with that intent, they become mezidim and they become chayav for the punishment of the capital crime. So the hatra'ah is only serving to change the status of the crime from shogeg to mezid. Therefore, someone who does not need that information, or does not need that to be explained to them, will not require hatra'ah. And that's a chaver or a chaveira who are knowledgeable and would know that what they are doing is wrong, and they're doing it intentionally, so therefore they will not require hatra'ah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Mizimim come and say these Edim were not there.
Their testimony would have to be premised. If they're going to put her to death, they would have come and said, we warned her, and she did it anyway. I mean, the whole testimony is a lie.
That's
so I'm saying, but they'll have to say, the case that Rav Kanan is talking about is a case where they tried to put her to death, and then they're found to be Zomimim, they cannot be put to death. But they could have only put her to death if they also lied about the Hatra. So how do we have a case where they didn't lie about the Hatra, and they still could be put her to death?
So we learn from here that they did have good female education back then.
Or some sort, right. That is very interesting. It is very interesting that the Gemara does apply Rabbi Yehuda ben Yehuda not only to a chaver but to a chavera, that he's the wife of a chaver, and I don't know if a chavera is not I think an independent standing status. A chavera is someone who is a isha of a chaver, right? And I think the Gemara in general is right. Or here, arusash a chaver, right? All right. So now Tosfos asked, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, what about Anshei Atirat Tzmol Mitah? So he says, either you have to say that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda does not require that, Anshei Atirat Tzmol Mitah, or you have to say, since the knowledge, what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda requires is knowledge, then the knowledge itself is what Atirat Tzmol Mitah, meaning that he can reach the same status on his own without having others bring him to that status. Right? Now, given the Inhu Lo Mikatle, wait a minute. So now the Gemara takes a step back. Okay, you came up with a case where they didn't give Hatra'ah, yet they still could put her to death, and therefore they should be put to death. And Rav Kanan says no. Gemara says, wait. Let's take a step back and say, can this work at all? Why? Kevan de inhu lo mikatle I hecha mikatlo. How could, if they are not put to death, how could she ever be put to death? Havila edut shi ata yechol hazima. It's an edut that is not able to be brought to the position of hazama. And any edut that cannot reach the point of hazama is not considered a good edut. So now, I would just say the term is used, we'll see it on the second half of today's daf, the term of edut shi'ata yichol hazima is used in other places in Shas, but in a different understanding or a different way. The perspective that it's used in other places in Shas is that if I am missing certain pieces of information, for instance, if the Edim do not say when it happened, they don't say where it happened, that's an edut shi'ata yechol hazima, because the information that is lacking from their testimony makes it impossible for us to ever be mezim them, because they left out very important or particular information that doesn't allow us to be mezim them. On the other hand, the Gemara here is using it in a different way, or a different meaning, which is that here, edut shi'ata yechol hazima is that we can be mezim them. We have the information to bring edim zomimim that can be mezim them. What we cannot do is bring them to the punishment of kasher zamam lasot. And then the Gemara calls that edut shi'ata yechol hazima. If you can't bring them to the same punishment that they were trying to bring upon one of the parties to the case, or the litigants in the case, the defendants in the case, if that's true, then they are not, that's an edut shi'ata yechol hazima. So it's a different understanding of i'ata yechol hazima. Now you'll run into some problems, like the first Mishnah Makot says, what happens to edim that testify about a Kohen that he's a ben Gusha ben Chalutza, which is something where you can't do, because you're a mam lasot. So they're not Kohanim. You can't make them into ben Gusha or Chalutza. So Gemara there says that they get Malkut. That's there. So over there, we don't say it's not Kashir Zamam Lasot. Now you could argue that is the Zamam. In that case, the Kashir Zamam is to get Malkus, because that's what the Torah prescribes. So why can't you do the same here? Say that they're deserving of Malkus, not of Miso, and that is the Kashir Zamam in this case. But the Gemara has an underlying assumption here that if they cannot get what they planned for the defendant, then they're not considered good edim. Now, hochinami, kamar. That's exactly what we mean here. That's what Rav Chanan is saying. Mitov she'en ne'aragin, she'echolim lomar lo'sra'a balabanu. So since they, right, cannot be put to death, because they can make a claim that they only came to make her restricted to her husband, afi ein ne'areget, she cannot be put to death. Davi la'idut, she'ata yechol hazima. So Mar says, that is exactly what Rav Chanan is saying, that it applies to both. The edim can't be put to death, because they can make a claim they came to restrict the woman on her husband, and since they can't be put to death, she cannot be put to death either. That means that you can have Edim bring them and make a Naram Rasa be put her to death. So Ella Biisha Chavira, the Kaimalon right? The Mikdala Aliba the Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda Echemishkachala. So now, if you don't hold of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, then you can come up with a case where they cannot say Labola Abanu, that we came to restrict her on her husband, which is a case where they gave Hatra'a, where they warned her and they said, you're going to get the death penalty, or they claimed that they warned her, then, number one, they would be put to death because they can't make the alternative claim that we came to restrict her on her husband because they're saying we're going to put you to death. So in that case, they would be put to death and therefore she could be put to death. But according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, where you do not require hatra'ah, since you do not require hatra'ah, how do you come up with a case where Edim can come and testify without hatra'ah and say that this woman will be put to death? Where's the case that the Murasab would be put to death?
Because I can have a case where there's Eidus Yechel and
the Yaman. Right, exactly, same thing. So, Ela b'Ishah Chavira, the Kaimelon, the Mikdala, Libid, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Shah Chavira that is put to death, according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, without any Hatra'ah, Hecha Mishkachala. How do you have a case like this? So, Gemara says, tries first thing, Kishazinta, B'chazer v'zinta. She, right, had an extramarital affair twice. So the first time, you could claim that they were doing it La'osra Bala, that they testified about the fact that she did that. They only need one time to testify that they are being Osra Bala. The fact that they testify about two incidents, it's clear that the second incident has nothing to do with the first incident. I mean, the first incident makes her restrict her husband. The second incident, the only incident to testify about it is to put her to death. So that's one answer. Mar says, wait, I have a great idea into it. Bayai cholin lamar, l'osra bala sheni, vanu. Meaning that, wait, we spoke about this before in the Gemara and Sota. The woman is not only restricted to her husband, she's also restricted to the individual who she has the affair with. But she's restricted to that individual, so if she is mizaneh twice, then she has two balim, and they can say, the first time they came along and said, we came to testify to make her restricted on her husband and the person she had an affair with. The second time, you're right, we don't need to osir her on her husband. She's already restricted to her husband. But we came to restrict her on her second individual she had the affair with. So that second individual we're coming to osir. So that doesn't help us over here. Somebody says, no, shezinta mibol rishon, that she has an affair twice with the same individual. So she has an affair twice with the same individual, they can't make that claim. Then the testifying the second time is gratuitous unless they're trying to put her to death. So inami shezinta mikrova. Or the other possibility is that she's mizaneh mikrova there, where there's no bo'alah to restrict her on. Meaning that it's arayot, outside of the fact that she is mizaneh, tachat her husband. She's also, right, over one of the arayot. And since it's one of the arayot, who she cannot marry in the future, they can't make a claim. We're coming to restrict her on this individual she had the affair with. She's already restricted in that individual. So in that instance, they would, their testimony could only be, right, to put her to death. If the testimony can only be to put her to death, then we have an idut she'achol azima, because they can be put to death, and she can be put to death in that case. Maishna nara murasa, denakot. Why does the Gemara here spend all this time with nara murasa? Afilu nisua nami. Right, so Rav Hanan's statement could be made about an nisua, not just about an arusa. And our whole Gemara could be read just the same way about an nisua as an arusa. There's nothing unique about an arusa that is not true of a nisua. I mean, the punishment of an arusa is just skila. Of a nisua, right, would be denek. Right? Nothing in the case that would be different. So Gemara says, in Ella, so, yes, you're right. True. We could have said about in Suaz and Rusa. That the Chiddush is that Rav Hanan's statement is made even about an Arusa. An Arusa who's yet to live with her husband, that the Edim can make such a claim that we came to restrict her to her husband. She's never lived with her husband yet, but they come and say, and they can say, ah, no, we didn't come to put her to death, we came to restrict her on her husband, and that claim is a valid claim, even though we're talking about an arusa, not a nisua. So that's the chiddush of the Gemara, is that Rav Hanan's statement is made about arusa. That's the chiddush, even though it's equally true about a nisua. So Amar Rav Chista, Echad Omer B'saif Harago, B'chad Omer B'ariran Harago. One of them says that the murder weapon was a sword, right? And the other one says that the murder weapon was a, I would say an ariran is a dagger. Over here you can see the Ein Mishpat brings down Kaini Zemel, which would be more like a pocket knife of sorts, or some sort of machete, you know. The Eshomim Kain Garzen, which would be an axe. Right? So I don't know. The murder weapon that they claim was different. One of them says it was a hatchet, one of them says it was a sword, one says a dagger, one says a sword. But there is some, the Edim are contradicting themselves with regards to what the murder weapon was. Ein Zeh Nachon. This is not considered to be a testimony that is consistent. Remember we said, "V'hinei emet nachon adavar." Nachon over here means a term that the edim, even in bdikot, even in certain items, have to be mekuvanim. They have to have consistent testimony, otherwise they're considered to be mukhashim. So here, if they get the murder weapon mixed up, they're mukhashim. One says that he was wearing black, one says he was wearing white clothing. That is consistent testimony. That inconsistency does not undermine their testimony, because it's not integral to the murder itself. Right? The murder weapon is integral to the case, whereas the clothing that he was wearing is not as important, as long as we know it's the right individual. So we have a braisa that seems to contradict this. Nachon. Shei nachon. What does it mean, nachon? Nachon means that they have to be consistent in their testimony. Chad omer b'saif harago, v'chad omer bariran harago. So when the murder weapon, they get confused. One says sword, one says dagger. Chad omer kelav shchorim, v'chad omer kelav dovanim. One says he's wearing black, one says he's wearing white. Ein ze nachon. That's not consistent testimony. So the braisa over here says that neither are considered to be consistent testimony, whereas Rav Chisda was saying it's true about the murder weapon, it's not true about the clothing. So Targuma, Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda said, no problem. Besudar shechan kobo. Now, that when we're talking about Kaliv, when I spoke about the clothing, I was saying what the murderer, right, the murderer was wearing. On the other hand, the braisa is speaking about what was the weapon of the murderer. Did he use a white cloth to choke him, or did he use a black cloth to choke him? I mean, now he's changing the braisa. He's speaking about a murder weapon. In that case, I agree that that's an inconsistent testimony. When one says the murder weapon was white, and one says the murder weapon was black. Dainu saif aviran, which is equivalent to the case of sword and dagger. Tashma. Echad omer sandalav shchorim, echad omer sandalav levanim. Right, one says that is shoes or his sandals were black, one says that they were white. Ein ze nachon. Again, this is inconsistent testimony. So it goes against Rav Chisda. So hatanami, kigon shabat bo b'sandalo b'harago. That the murder was carried out through a kick. One swift kick with the sandal. And that's what put the guy to death. So again, we're talking about the murder weapon. The murder weapon is getting mixed up. Was it a white murder weapon or was it a black murder weapon? Tashma. From our Mishnah, Maaseh uvadak ben Zakai b'ukzei te'ena. There's a case in our Mishnah where ben Zakai looked into the matter and he said that he asked the edim, were the stems that attached the figs to the tree thick or thin? All right, so that's now, wait a minute. We're talking about stems that are thick or thin. We're talking about items that are not necessarily related to the murder.
Poison figs.
Close. So now that he picked the te'ena on Shabbos, so they're severing the teina from the tree by the stem. Zalaka miktol. That's what he's being killed for. He's being put to death for picking the teina. So you're talking about the crime itself. The crime itself is perpetrated by picking it off the tree. So where did he pick? Did he pick a thick stem or was he picking a thin stem?
Didn't we already make a chilut that there's bdikos and hakiros, and bdikos are not associated with the edus?
Only if they're inconsistent. No, they can say any odeya. They can say by bedikot, they can say I don't know, and that's fine. Both of them, one of them or both of them can say I don't know. By bedikot, if they are inconsistent in their testimony, that could be a reason to undermine the case. Now here, Rav Chisda qualifies that and says that's only with issues that are relevant directly to the case or the crime. But things that are somewhat, right, exogenous to the crime itself, like what clothing he was wearing, I mean, I might have considered that to be a part of it, but they say that Rav Chisda considers that to be outside the scope of the crime itself. Atanyu, don't we have a braisa? Amar lo tachat te'ena harago. A braisa that has the same thing with Ben Zakkai, who says that the murder was perpetrated under a fig tree. So if that's the case, he's asking them about what type of stems there were. It's clear that those are not the... We're not talking about Chilu Shabbos, it's about picking a teina. Ella, so here, Ellen for you. Amar Rabbi Chama Kagon, Sheshibdo b'yichos shel teina. Right, he skewered him with the stem of the fig. That was the murder weapon. Right, so that was it. So Tashma, wait a minute. Amar Lam teina zu. Ukseh dakin, ukseh gasin. Teinim shchorot. Teinim levanot. So that works when you're talking about a stem. So he said the stems are thin or thick. But then he says, were the figs white, right, or black? So what now you're going to say that the murder weapon was a fig? That what is? What type of murder are you perpetrating with a fig? Obviously, that's not the murder weapon. So that can't be the case. Right, wait a minute. You're going to ask a question from Ben Zakkai Ben Shiny Ben Zakai to bedikot kechakirot mishavile. Ben Zakai has an unusual shita that he equates bedikot to chakirot. So that's what your question was to be. What about bedikot? In the Mishnah, we said that bedikot cannot undermine the case. And here, Ben Zakkai is asking about thin stems and thick stems. How does that undermine the case over here? So that's Ben Zakkai's approach, that bedikot have the same status as chakirot. And Rashi over here says, v'chi heichi de b'chakirot, the second widest line in Rashi, v'chi heichi de b'chakirot mit kachashe b'davar, right, if a bedavar acher, just like by chakirot, that they are considered to be inconsistent about something else, because like zeomer b'makom ploni, v'zer b'makom ploni, something exogenous to the crime itself, which is there was a murder perpetrated, and yet we say if they are inconsistent as to the place that the murder took place, they're still considered to be a dut mucheshet, even though it's nothing to do with the crime itself. I would have thought so, but anyway, it's had nothing to do with the crime, is where the crime was perpetrated. Dainu davar acher, damakom lo hargo, the place didn't kill him. Hachanami bibidikot, so too bibidikot, even though they're exogenous to the crime itself, nevertheless, if there's an inconsistency in the testimony, that will undermine their testimony. They would not be considered good edim over here. So that's been, then that guy takes to an extreme that you can ask any type of question if you find the edim to be inconsistent in that question. Again, they have the right to say any yoda, the right to say I don't know, and that will not undermine their testimony. But if they already give an answer, and then their answers are inconsistent, right? Ben Zakkai claims that that's enough to be okay, right? To undermine their testimony because they're inconsistent. Just like Bechakirot, we see that they ask about the location of the murder, even though the location itself didn't kill. And nevertheless, that can undermine the edut. So to over here, other items can undermine the, like the figs or the stems of the figs can undermine the their testimony.
Wait, so this is, we originally had a chizit, we had a mesit, we had a price.
Yeah.
So
Rav Chisda was able to answer up the questions from the Braita, the questions from a Mishnah, but they reached a point where he couldn't answer up about Ben Zakkai's position. So the Gemara's answer is that Ben Zakkai is a unique position, and Rav Chisda is not explaining Ben Zakkai's position. He's explaining everybody besides Ben Zakkai's position, because Ben Zakkai has this unusual position that bedikot are equated to chakirot, according to Ben Zakkai. Right, so now Gemara says, Man Ben Zakkai. Who is this Ben Zakkai that appears in the Mishnah? Ile Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. Right, the most obvious would be Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai is the other. Mi hava b'Sanhedrin. Since when was Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai even in the Sanhedrin? Meaning that Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai is describing a situation or a case where he's sitting on a murder trial. And sitting in a murder trial, he's a judge that's asking, what were the stems? Since when did Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai sit on a Sanhedrin that could have carried out capital punishment? Batanya, don't we have a brisa? Koshno tavshu Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai me'av esrim shana. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai lives for 120 years. Arba'im shana asak b'prakmatia. For 40 years, he was in business. Bem shama lamad. After that, for 40 years, he learned. Right, Arba'im shama limed. And after that, he taught for 40 years. He broke his life down into thirds. First third, he worked. The second third, Rashi says it was in order. Second third, he learned. Became a Talmid Chacham. And then the last third, he was teaching others. And we would assume that at that time, he was also the time he would have been a judge when he was teaching others. That last 40 years, he would be teaching others. So I'm assuming everybody here is now retired and on to the second 40, doing their learning. Right. Betanya, we have a Braisa. That 40 years before the Churban HaBayit, the Sanhedrin went and left in Bayit Sheni. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara in other places discusses the fact that the Sanhedrin went through a process of Galut, just like the Shekhinah. Although the Shekhinah was talking about Bayit Rishon. In Bayit Rishon, the Shekhinah leaves the Mikdash in stages. It moves from place to place to stage. It goes through 10 Galiot until it finally leaves the Mikdash. So too, the Sanhedrin in Bayit Sheni went through a series of places. It moved from place to place. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah enumerates the places. The first was that they left the Lishkat HaGazit, and they went to the Chanut. They went out in the Shuk. They went to be somewhere outside of Lishkat HaGazit. Why? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says because Shechichei Rotzchim. There were too many murderers. There were too many murderers, and because there were too many murderers, they didn't want to have ability to carry out capital punishment. They felt that it wasn't proper anymore. I mean, that If you have a couple people they have to put to death, then it's one thing. But Shchichei Rotzchim became impossible for them to deal with the situation of capital punishment. So what did they leave? They left the Lishkat HaGazit. We saw earlier in the Masechta that Hamakom Goreim, that only when they're sitting in Lishkat HaGazit is the death penalty in effect. Once they leave the Lishkat HaGazit, they can't carry out capital cases. So they left 40 years before the Churban, they left the Beit HaMikdash, and they are now already, right, setting up shop outside Lishkat HaGazit. Which means that already 40 years before the Churban, they are not carrying out capital cases.
So this Sanhedrin Ketamah could give life sentence?
Yes.
That goes in the Lishkat HaGazit?
No, but only when the Sanhedrin Agdolah is in Lishkat HaGazit, are the Beis Din of 23 empowered to carry out capital cases.
Even though they were not there, was still...
Right, but they get their samchut from the Sanhedrin Agdolah that's sitting up in the Mikdash. Right. Vitznan, and we have a Mishnah, right, which is, sorry, I skipped that. So they went to Chenev Amar, Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, Rabbi Bedumei Lomar, Shlo Danu Dine Knasot. That teaches you why they leave the Mikdash, Lishkat HaZit, so they didn't do any Dine Knasot. What says Dine Knasot? What do you mean Dine Knasot? They did Dine Knasot after the Mikdash was destroyed. Dine Knasot is subject to whether you have Smicha or don't have Smicha. And Smicha continued even after the Churban Abayit. We know that from the Gemara's in the first parak, that Dine Knasot was an issue in Eretz Yisrael. They had Dine Knasot, but above all they didn't because they didn't have Smicha. But wherever you had Smicha, they did have Dine Knasot. El Shlo Danu Dine Nefashot. What are they? They're leaving the Lishkat HaGazit had implications that there were no more capital cases. Bitnan. Right, we have a Mishnah, Mishchara, Beit HaMikdash. It's a series of takanot. Hitkin Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a series of takanot which were Zecher the Mikdash. So remember them, one of them happens to coming up now in Yonah, the Omer is to be the Omer. Right, that Yomanev Kulo Asur. Right, that was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Hitkin. Right, so one of the things that he did was Bimetakin, the Skol Yomanev Asur. And that is Zecher LeMikdash. We also said that Lulav is Nikach Chol Shiva, that Lulav is taken all 7 days. All these takanot were Zecher LeMikdash. Now, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could only have implemented those when, after the Churban. Right, he has to be around after the Churban to do something that's Zecher the Churban. So by definition, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived at least, let's call it at least 1 year after the Churban, probably more, but he lived for at least 1 year after the Churban. So if that's the case, that means that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lived at least 1 year after the Churban. The last 40 years of his life had to be from the Churban, had to be within the last 40 years that the Mikdash was standing. So if that's the case, he couldn't have been ever sitting on a Beis Din that was adjudicating a capital case. Because they already had stopped capital cases 40 years before the Churban. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who clearly lived after the Churban, and only in the last 40 years of his life, would have been a judge, or would have been sitting on a Sanhedrin, it couldn't be that he was ever adjudicating a capital case. Ella ben Zakkai Dauma. And I bet some other ben Zakkai. Hachanami Mistava, that makes sense. Dizakadatcha Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Right, so why would you... If you would say that it makes a lot of sense that we're talking about somebody other than Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, why? Because if you were talking about Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, so now you can either say Karilei Rabbi ben Zakkai, you call Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, I mean that's not a term of respect or kavod. Why would you term Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in the Mishnah as ben Zakkai? That's one thing if there's someone in the Mishnah like Rabbi Akiva or somebody of his peers is addressing him and saying ben Zakkai. Then that's fine. But to the Mishnah in a stam form, to address or to call Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ben Zakkai, that's not an appropriate title for Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai.
Anybody in the Beis Din Shalom, Shem Shalosh or Shem Yachat has Smicha. So anybody, even his ben Zakkai, would have had Smicha. So why would he also have been Rabbi?
Right. It could have been, right. I mean, why didn't he have a title of sorts? Right. I don't know. It's a good question about his title. I think they felt like Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was a tremendous figure of authority, and he was a nasi of those sorts of things, that it would be inappropriate to call him that, as opposed to anybody else you can call him. You know, we have others. You're right. That generally like Ben Zoma and all these are people who didn't get smicha, and that's why they're called Ben somebody instead of they don't get the title of Rabban.
But you're
all right. Gemara is willing to accept that if it's not Rabbi Yochanan, but I think you have a good point. A very good point there. Vatanya. Wait a minute. We have a brisa that explicitly says Maseh ubadak Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai beukse teirim. Now you're in trouble. Brisa explicitly says that who the ben Zakkai is Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai. Ella, the answer is tell me that Yoshev lifnei Rabbo Hava. This answers both of our problems. Yochanan ben Zakkai was a Talmud that was sitting before his Rebbeim, meaning that this is in his second 40 years of his life, meaning that 80 years before that he was after the Churban. Amar Milsa, he spoke up. As one of the Talmidim, he spoke up. And they thought that what he said was good, or made sense, right? So therefore, b'kavua b'shmei, and therefore they established a law in his name, right? Kiava lamad. So when he was learning, when he was still learning before the others, then they called him Ben Zakai Hava, right? Karile kitamira yoshev lifnei rabo. Kiava limate, when he became a teacher and he was on the Sanhedrin, Ava karile Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakai. So then, when they call him Kikari Le Ben Zakai in the Mishnah, is al shame demi kara. That is his original shame. When the incident took place, where he made such a statement, he was involved in a capital case, and he made a statement, and he was still a Talmud. So over there, his name was Ben Zakai at the time. And the Mishnah preserves the name that was used at the time that he made the statement, which is Ben Zakai. Kikari Le Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakai, al shame tahashta. And the Braisa that uses Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakai is talking about his current name or his current status, which is Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakai. So not an inconsistency. One of them is talking about the way we address him today, the Braisa. And the Mishnah is talking about the name that was used when he made the statement. The name that was used when he made the statement was a Talmud, and it was called Ben Zakai then. And that would also allow him to be involved in a capital case, because that would give you 80 years before the, at least 1 year after the Churban that existed, that would put him back into the time period when they still were adjudicating capital cases. That's how the Gemara solves the problem that it is Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakai. It's just that he's called Ben Zakai here because it was when he was still in his stage of being a student. Alright. Maso Vadak, Ma Ben Chakirot Le Bidikot. So Mar says, My Afilu Shnaim Omrim. What does it mean in the Mishnah? Well, we said in the Mishnah that if one says, I don't know, fine. And they say, even if two say, I don't know, then it's fine, their testimony is fine. Pshita. Ki Amar Achad Eini Yodea, Idutan Kayemet. If one of them says, I don't know, then the Idut is fine. Ki Amri Beitrei, Nami Idutan Kayemet. Of course, then if both of them say, I don't know, then there should be not a problem. Right, it's consistent, meaning that, right. If one can say, I don't know, then why can't two say, I don't know? What's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? So Amar Rav Sheshet Areisha Koi. It's going on the previous statement in the Mishnah. V'achi kamar b'chakirot. When it comes to chakirot, afilu shnayim armim yadanu. Right. V'cher amar ini yodeo dutan b'teila. It's going back on the earlier part of the Mishnah, which says that when it comes to chakirot, if you have three edim who show up, three edim, and they say, what day of the week was it that the murder took place? Two of them say, you know, it was Tuesday. Right. And one of them says, I don't know. So there they're going to say, Edutan Teila. The Edut is no good. So there, as opposed to, right, our case over here by Bidikot, where the Eni Yodea does not affect the case, that's not true by Chakirot. By Chakirot, the Eni Yodea will affect the case, even though you could have said over here, we have two good Edim and one bad apple. Kick the bad apple out, it says Eni Yodea, and you still, you'll be Mekayim the Edut with the other two. So you know, come on, who's this like? Rabbi Akiva. This is like Rabbi Akiva, the Mekish L'Shad Shnayim. So we saw Rabbi Akiva quoted in the Gemara on Tet. Rabbi Akiva's famous statement that Alama, why does it say Al Pi Shnayim Al Pi Shloshay Dim Yakum Davar? Why does it say two and three? So it's like Kishaleh. Right, it's to make a hakesh between the two and the three. Now, truthfully, Rabbi Akiva does not make that statement. That statement is made actually by Rabbi Shimon. Shimon is Mekish 2-3. That's Rabbi Akiva says. No, lo, right, the hakel aleihem, el alachmir aleihem, ba. Right, so that's it. Rabbi Akiva says no. And he says, ma, the Torah says that a mitvah le'ovrei avera. Someone who joins in with people who are doing bad, right, he gets the same punishment as them, meaning that if you have zomimim, edim are made to meet zomimim. And here the third aid was not necessary to make the testimony, right, you could have had two edim and put him to death. And the third one comes, and he's still put to death with them if they're found to be edim zomimim. So those who join people who do mitzvot, even though you weren't necessary to be there, but you enjoin yourself with doing the mitzvot, that's a positive statement. So the Gemara, Rashi wants to know, why do they quote Rabbi Akiva as the author of this position? The author of this position is really Rabbi Shimon. So Rashi claims that Rabbi Akiva is building on the position of Rabbi Shimon. He holds Rabbi Shimon's position, but he says even more. So they bring Rabbi Akiva as being the, right, the one who takes it to the farthest extreme. But Rabbi Akiva is really b'shita Rabbi Shimon, and in Hochanami, the Gemara could have said Rabbi Shimon. Tosus rejects, and it says, well, if you could have said Rabbi Shimon, say Rabbi Shimon. Why do they say Rabbi Akiva? So, Tosus claims that the Gemara here is specifically saying Rabbi Akiva, not Rabbi Shimon, because there's a difference of opinion here. That's what Rege says, about Amar Eni Yodea, k'shenimtza echad meyem karov basol dami. That that when you have a case where you have a karov or a pasul that's found amongst the edim, right, you have two ways to deal with a karov or pasul amongst the edim. Three edim, one of them is a karov or pasul. You can either say the whole edut is betela, the whole edut falls apart, because you have three people, one of them is pasul, they all fall apart. Or you can say, excise, cut off the one who is a pasul, and then you'll use the edim for the rest. And that's exactly what Tosafot says, machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Akiva. Even though Rabbi Shimon says that if there are three edim and one of them is not found to be zomamim, achiyazumu kulam, they're not made into edim zomamim until you find all three of them to be zomamim. If one of them is found not to be a zomamim and the other two are, you can't punish this cut edim. So Rabbi Shimon's the hakel, and Rabbi Akiva says it's not the hakel, but the hachmir. So that's Rabbi Shimon's kula, and the difference in their opinion according to Tosafot is if you found a karov pasul. If I had a karov pasul amongst the three, Rabbi Shimon will say, get rid of the pasul, and the other two will be good edim. According to Rabbi Akiva, that's not true. That aid will be posel, all three of them. And that's why the Gemara over here quotes Rabbi Akiva. Because when you say any yodea, one of them says any yodea becomes an aid pasul. He's an aid pasul, he ruins the other two edim. Whose opinion is it that when one aid is problematic, he ruins the other two edim? That's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. So it also says that this is specifically Rabbi Akiva, not Rabbi Shimon. So, Amar Rava, so he says, wait a minute, Amar Rava, v'ha idutan kayemet k'tani. The Mishnah, you're saying that it goes back to the Reisha, that the Reidut is not nikayemet when you have an Eni Yodea b'chakirot. But that's not what the Mishnah says, afilu shnayim omrim Eni Yodea, it says Eidudan kayemet. It makes a positive statement in the Mishnah. How can you say it's referencing back to the Reisha b'chakirot and it doesn't work? The Mishnah says that even these two people, it does work. So you can't be making, you're interpreting the Mishnah incorrectly. Amar Rav Achi Kamar. Afilu b'chakirot, shnayim omrim yadanu, b'chad omar Eni Yodea, Eidutan kayemet. The other way around, that even by a case of chakirot, if two say we know the answer, one says we don't answer, idudan kayemet, keman, deloka Rabbi Akiva. Who is that like? That is not like Rabbi Akiva. I mean, yes, eno achanami, that it works, but it works not like Rabbi Akiva. I mean, like Rabbi Shimon, according to Tosfos, and according to Rashi, it's neither like Rabbi Shimon or Rabbi Akiva, but that the idutan is not nitbatelet. If you have two that say have good information, we'll take those two on to try the case, and the other guy will get dropped. And that's what we're saying over here. Rav Kahana, Rav Safra, Kahana, Rav Safra, Tanu Sanhedrin, Bei Rabo. They were studying, they were learning Masechet Sanhedrin in the base medrash of Rabo. Pagahu Rami Bar Chamo. Rami Chamo bumped into him and, oh, Maya Amritu Bad Sanhedrin to Bei Rabo. What did you hear? What Chidushim? You're learning Sanhedrin by Tamar Chochem, like Rabo. Who is, like, what type of Chidushim did you hear? How is his Sanhedrin different than the Sanhedrin that we learned? I mean, that you are learning it from Rabo, we had a Masorah, we learned it by someone else. What type of chidushim are you hearing? Samrilei, umayamrin and ba b'sanhedrin gredita. Right? So he says, my kashalach. Meaning that, okay, what is bothering you? Obviously something was bothering Rami Bar Chama. He says, what's bothering you even regular Sanhedrin? Meaning that even the Sanhedrin that you learned by others, what is it that's bothering you that you have a question about that you're asking us? Ah, do you have something special to say by Rabbah? So he says, Amrilei, mahadiktoni. I have a problem from our Mishnah, which is ma ben chakirot b'dikot. What's the difference between chakirot and midot? Chakirot echad omer ani yodea edutan betela. Bidikot echad omer echad ani yodea afilu shnayim omrim enein ayudim edutan kayemet. Michtei. Idi v'idi d'oraisahi. Chakirot and bidikot both come from the Torah. So why should there be a difference? Maishna chakirot to maishna bidikot. Why are chakirot me'akev and bidikot are not me'akev if they both come from the Torah? They're both d'oraisa. They're both the requirements of the case. Why should be one be different than the other? So they responded to him. How can you compare the two? Bichaki wrote, Amar echad eni yodea, idutam tila, davila idut shiatay echol azima. Right, that their edut doesn't work because it's an edut she'aytay chol ezima. Now this is what I told you before. This is the normal way that edut she'aytay chol ezima is used throughout Shas, which is that there's an inability to create zomimim because you're missing an essential piece of information. If you're missing an essential piece of information, we can't make them into edim zomimim because that piece is missing. Not that they can't be punished exactly like the way they're trying to punish others. So that's edut she'aytay chol ezima. That's chakirot. Bidikot, amar echad me'en eni yodea udutam kayemet. Edut she'aytay chol ezima hu. Because if they say any odea, we don't know what the stems of the figs look like. That doesn't change the fact that they could be made into edim zomimim. They gave you the seven basic facts that will allow them to come zomimim. That's not missing from the case over here. He says, if that's what you learned, if that's what you say about it, you're speaking well. I mean that you learned well. That's a great idea. What you're learning in that base medrash is good, and I'm really impressed with what you know. So Amrilei, they responded to him, Mitivute demar amrinim ba'tuve. Because of your demeanor, the way that you presented the question, and the way you spoke to us, that's why you got a good answer from us. Because you spoke gently and you asked your question in a nice way, in a nice manner, therefore we had a good answer for you. But had you asked your question in a manner which was either challenging or in a manner that wasn't pleasant, then lo aminu ba v'lo chado, we would have not had a good answer for you. Now I don't know if that said that intentionally they wouldn't have had a good answer, or we wouldn't have been able to get to a good answer because we would have felt challenged or nervous and we wouldn't have gotten to the right answer. So I don't know if it's something that's imposed because of the way the question was asked, therefore they wouldn't reach it, or because if you asked that way we would have refused to answer you because we don't want someone to count there. We want someone that's coming just to challenge for challenge's sake. We're trying to test us. I mean, that's not what we want. We won't answer questions like that. But because you presented your question in such a nice manner, you spoke beautifully, we also gave you a nice answer, and we also were able to answer you properly. All right, now, the Gemara continues. Echad Omer, right, we said here that they have differences in the dates of the month. One says the third and one says the fifth. We say that's not an inconsistent testimony because one knows about Yibar Chodesh. I'm sorry, third and the fourth. That's not inconsistent. Third and the fifth, it is inconsistent. Because one knows about the Yibar Chodesh, one doesn't know about the Yibar Chodesh. Tzvi asked on the Mishnah, Ad Kama? Until when in the month do we expect the person not to know about Yibar Chodesh? So, until the robe of the Chodesh has gone by. I mean that in the first half of the Chodesh, we assume the person may not know about Yibar Chodesh. Once you reach the second half of the Chodesh, we expect someone to know already. The information has gotten around. The news has traveled that this is in Yibar Chodesh. You got the date. You know, meaning that you make a mistake a couple of times, you write a couple of checks in the first half of the Chodesh, you misdate them. But the second half of the Chodesh, people are already correcting you. You got the wrong date on the check.
So in other words, the difference in one day is only...
is only applicable in the first half of the Chodesh. Correct. That fact that we assume that they're talking about the same day in the first half of the Chodesh is only true when we're talking about the first half of the Chodesh. I mean, one day, right, the difference of one day. So now the Gemara is going to ask, Avar Abba, Afa Nami Nami Tanina, we also learned, right, in our Mishnah, Echad Omer B'Shloshev, Echad Omer B'Hei, which is what we discussed yesterday. You asked him about this question. I said the example in the Mishnah is given, it's the third and the fifth, Edutam Teila. Let's say that they one knows about 2 months that were leap months, meaning that we were full months, Malay Chadashim Mleim, right? And one doesn't know about it. Why do you say that he only knows about, we can make a mistake of one day because he doesn't know about this month's being Malay? But what about, maybe he didn't know about 2 months being Malay? So El Olav, why? Bishum de Beruba Yoda. So no, that the only, always by the time you reach the rope of the month, you know about it. So it would be impossible for him to not know in 2 months that it's Yibar Chodesh. By the time you get to the second half of the month, he knows about it. He says, no. No, that it's not true. But, ubishipura yada. Right? Bechad shipura. Alright? Yada, bechad shipura. I'm sorry, Bechad Shipura Amar Detoi, Betray Shipura Lo Amar Detoi. The Bach changes the gears a little bit to read easier over here. It says, Amri Detoi, Betray Shipura Lo Amrina Detoi. That a person, they used to blow a shofar in Beis Din to announce the Kiddush HaChodesh. So we assume that a person will possibly not hear about one blowing of the shofar, but it's not possible he would miss two blowing of the shofar. I mean, two announcements. He might miss one announcement, he won't miss two announcements. And therefore, even though he may not know about the Yibar Chodesh, even when it gets to a second month, that's not necessarily, we don't say that he won't know about two Yibar Chodesh because of the announcement of Beis Din, not because when you reach Rov HaChodesh, he automatically knows. But because he won't miss two announcements. So there's no proof from our Mishnah that once you reach the Rov HaChodesh, that he should know about it. It doesn't argue with this case, but it's not a proof from our Mishnah that he has to know it about Rov HaChodesh. The reason in our Mishnah might have to do with the fact that there are two announcements. And that's why he knows about it, but not that Rov HaChodesh automatically knows about it. Now, this is going to lead us into the next sugya about Rov HaChodesh, which is, Amar Rav Acha Bachanina, Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Ad Kama Mevarchim Al HaChodesh. Until what point of the month can you do Kiddush Levana? All right, so Aj Shetit Malei Pkimata. Until it reaches a full moon, meaning until the moon fills in, the missing part of the moon fills in, then you can do it. And that's it. Until it's a full moon, basically. That's it. As long as there's not a full moon, you can still do it. Vikamo. So what does that mean? How much does it have to fill in? I mean, the Pkima of Levana means that the Levina is a small, When it starts out, it's a small strip, and then it fills in and fills in and fills in. What is considered not to be, right, a levana pkuma? What does that say? So Amar Yochai Ba'idi Amar Yoda Ad Shiva. He says until the 7 days. Now Adai Amrei Ad Shishasar, until the 16th of the month. Right, which will come, we have to deal with that with the 16th, but maybe tomorrow we're going to spend some time on the sugi of Kiddush Levana. We'll discuss the halachas that come with this. Tavayu ki Rabbi Yochanan Tzvirlo, they both hold like Rabbi Yochanan. Hal meheve ki yatera, hal meheve ki nafya. One of them wants it look like a semicircle, and one of them wants it look like a nafya, like a sieve, like a circle. I mean that when do you consider the moon no longer to be pagum? Where do you consider it no longer to be not whole? Right, is it when you reach the quarter of the month, when the moon is a half moon? At that point in time, it's no longer pagum, because it's reached a semicircle, and that's the wholeness of the moon. That's a not a full moon, but a moon that is not pagum. Or do you say that the moon, when it's not pekimata, is when it's a full moon? So until the point it reaches a full moon, it's considered pagum. And that'll be a machlokas here. Naradai can say you can only, I mean, Rabbi Yaakov, Idiom Rabbi Yehuda says you can only say Kiddush Levana until the 7th of the month. And Naradai say you can only say it until the 16th of the month. It's interesting that the Halacha, and we'll see this tomorrow, that the Sfaradim only say from the 7th month and onward. They don't consider the Levana to be Chidusha and not to be not Pagum. They only say Kiddush Levana between the 7th and the 15th, between these 2 days. They won't say it in the first 7 days of the month. Right, as opposed to Ashkenazim, only wait 72 hours. Only wait in order to do Kiddush Levana. But they come here, Ad Shiva, and then we have to deal with Ad Shishasar. Why until the 16th of the month? The moon is full on the 15th of the month. So Ad Shishasar means Ad Ba'ad Bechlau or Ad Ba'lo Ba'ad Bechlau. What does it mean until the 16th of the month is considered Pagum? Alright, so they have to, we'll discuss all of this tomorrow, because of the sugya of Kiddush Levana tomorrow. One thing I would point out, what Tosus says over here, how come in our Mishnah, we're willing to kill somebody misafek? We see over here that if they say, one guy says it was the 3rd of the month, one guy says it's the 4th of the month, and we are toin on their behalf, that one of them knows about Ibra Chodesh, one doesn't know about Ibra Chodesh. So here we're toin on their behalf and putting somebody to death based on an assumption, which is a rove. Right, we're using rov. That rov, maybe a la rov, people are not inconsistent in their testimony, and they might not know about Ibra Chodesh. How can we make a capital case in that situation? So Tosfos says you have other pieces of information over here that are giving us evidence that they are consistent, because we also ask them what day of the week it happened. They both say it happened on Tuesday, but they're giving you different dates of what Tuesday is. So there is circumstantial evidence that they are talking about the same day, and they really, one of them knows about Ibra Chodesh, and one doesn't know about Ibra Chodesh. I mean, that there are other factors that are leading us to believe that that is true here. We're not just making an assumption that, okay, we're putting him to death because they are, one knows and one doesn't know. They've made other statements that indicate to us that they really are consistent in their testimony. This inconsistency can be explained, and since we can explain this inconsistency, we don't consider it as a testimony. When he corrects it to the right day of the month, we don't consider it Shub Chozer Magid. It's not like he's re-testifying, is that he's amending the first testimony, but amending it in a way that's mutar. Say, I didn't know about Ibra Chodesh, and now that I know about it, I can correct my testimony to the right date. And therefore, it's not, it's not he's changing his testimony. He has a way to explain the other testimony, which means that he's talking about the same day. And therefore, we're not dealing here of killing somebody a la safek. Okay, we'll stop over here.